When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
ES Audio.
From the Evening Standard in London, I'm John Weeks, and this is The Leader. Eddie Izzard. The transgender comedian, marathon runner, actor and Labour MP hopeful is now enjoying success in her latest piece of work, a one-woman adaptation of Dickens's Great Expectations. After a 9-week run of the show in New York, Eddie spoke with the Evening Standard's chief theatre critic, Nick Curtis, about her one-woman performance, her gender fluidity and her personal drive to succeed. This interview is from the Evening Standard Theatre Podcast, which you can find on your podcast provider. There's also a link in the show notes.
I'm here at Riverside Studios with Eddie Izzard, or Susie Izzard, as she is sometimes known now.
As anyone can choose, yes, to make everyone happy so they don't need to write in on a postcard and say, what's going on? Prefer she, her, don't mind he, him, prefer Susie, don't mind Eddie. I'm gender fluid, I've been out for 38 years, so everyone should be used to this by now. But the pronoun thing is a slight adjustment.
Okay.
But no one can make a mistake with me.
Right.
And my brother's sticking with Eddie, my director, Selena Cadell, is sticking with Eddie, my older brother, Mark, sticking with Eddie, so... It's all groovy.
Okay.
Unless you call me Arthur or Sabrina or...
I won't call you any of those.
Or, yeah.
We've met a few times over the years, but this time we are talking about a new venture.
Yes.
Your first Dickensian stage show, Great Expectations.
Yes, first of 9 that I'm going to do.
Well, you're going to do the complete works.
Well, there is it in my head because it started from the fact I'm 150 years to the day younger than Dickens. I just knew this. I found this out when I was younger. 7th of February, 1812, 7th of February, 1962. What does it mean? Nothing in particular. But then I realized I'd never read a great work of literature. And so I thought, well, I got this Dickens link. Why don't I ask if anyone out there would like me to do an audiobook? And a company called Wildfire, they said, yes, we will commission you to go for... And they chose Great Expectations. They chose it.
Oh, they chose it, not you.
They chose it, because it could have been anywhere. I suppose Oliver was one I had more of a link to. My brother was saying Pickwick Papers, which was still really interesting in my head, because I don't know that so well. But I'd never read a work of literature because I'm dyslexic, severely atypically dyslexic. But I thought this would push me to read a book because, you know, they say, well, we've commissioned you. You've signed a contract. As I was doing, or even before I was doing it, I realized that singers... In my stand-up, I play multiple characters, a technique I got from Richard Pryor.
Mm.
I could use this multiple characters talking to each other technique, which not everyone does in stand-up. In fact, most people don't seem to do in stand-up, but I do. And I thought, well, I can use that for drama as well as for stand-up. And I said in my head, why didn't I do this? Do a dramatic version of Great Expectations. I said to my older brother, Mark, why don't we work on this together? We'll cut it down. He just did it himself while I was touring. So I said, fine, Mark, if you do it. So we'd already worked together. And it's tricky working with family. Sometimes it can go wrong. But he's done a great job on Great Expectations. Cut it down for 20 hours to just over 2 hours. It's just under 2 hours now. And about the same length as the film, the benchmark film. And we took it to New York first, off Broadway. And
why New York first?
Well, it was partly because New York knew me and London knew me as well, so I could go either place. It was available there. I just thought, well, let's try it in New York.
Does it carry less baggage over there? I mean, I think because Great Expectations, it has great name recognition, but it also is rather freighted. You know, there's been that other new version,
Over here, you mean?
Yes.
Well, it wasn't more like that. Maybe they would give me slightly more space. I'm known as comedy and drama, slightly stronger in America. In Britain, they're still, oh, you're a comedian. Have you done anything drama? Well, I've done 25 years of films up to Victoria and Abdul, and I was Tony nominated on Broadway. Oh, really? We didn't notice any of this. So there's been a sort of a non-viewing of that. And, you know, my comedy is really interesting, but my drama has now got really interesting. I think my drama started very weak.
Right.
And I know why, and I can tell you why.
Why?
Because I had the presence of mind, as a lover of films who broke into Pinewood Studios when I was 15, like Spielberg did to Universal when he was 17. Different careers, but still, the idea of trying to get in the film.
Same basic arc, yes.
Same basic trying to get in there. Mine was a slower takeoff. I realize that it's about being rather than acting, rather than pushing. But also there's a thing I feel that bottom line of comedy is to be funny and the bottom line of drama is to be truthful. And if you go from comedy into drama, you have developed comedy muscles. These muscles get in the way when you're trying to be truthful and live in a scene as a character. So I switched all my comedy muscles off. I dialed them all down to zero on the control desk in my mind. And then I realized I had no instincts because I hadn't developed the dramatic instincts. So my early work in films is somewhere between not good or basic or nothing really is happening there. And now I think my drama is getting, well, the rave reviews, the best reviews I've had in my life from New York. It's 45 pull quotes. In The Guardian, they said, I went on about it three times about my reviews because they're great and I need to be my own self-publicist because otherwise you get lost in a big maelstrom of everything else going on.
Yes, sure.
Let's take a break now. This interview is from the Evening Standard's Theatre Podcast. For interviews with people like Tim Minchin, Marisha Wallace, Jenna Coleman, and Sir Lenny Henry, just search for the Evening Standard Theatre Podcast. Coming up in part two, Eddie tells Nick why she's so well suited to the role of Hamlet.
But when I'm playing Hamlet, the weird thing is I feel very at home. Yeah. And I said to Ian McKellen, I'm 61, is this a bit old to play? This is before he did his. Is this a bit old to play Hamlet? He said, no, do it any age you want. I'm like, all right, Ian.
Also rehearsing your one woman Hamlet at the same time as doing Dickens. Now,
as they did in the great days of repertory.
Yeah, well, I don't think they did them one woman at the time, did they?
But like the great days of repertory. But that doesn't. I don't know if you'd asked all the actors, would they be okay on doing a one person show? Maybe they wouldn't be so cool on it. But I'm perfectly suited to do the one person show because they won't give me a Hamlet. You know, no one's putting Eddie Izzard, Susie Izzard, whoever they call themselves. Mm. Shall we put them at the top of our list? The next person to ask to do Hamlet? I don't think so. So I thought, let's go in. And we're doing open rehearsals as well, which will happen throughout this year and in and around Britain. And it's an intriguing thing. People, if they saw it, they seem to be positive about what I could do with Hamlet. Because you're playing Hamlet and Ophelia and Gertrude and Polonius. And you're taking the whole thing apart. And the history. I love the history of Shakespeare. Why did he not write Hamlet down? Why is it the first quarto and then the second quarto and then the folio 20 years later? Why is the first quarto lost until the 1800s?
Yeah.
And then they find it out. And if you look at the To Be speech, it's completely, well, it's about half, or maybe it's the quarter, 25% the same. That's intriguing. Why didn't he write it down if it's the big deal? Hmm. When Shakespeare died, why was there not a big song and dance if he's the greatest bard that was ever happening? Hmm. He just died in Stratford and no one gave a monkey's.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Ben Jonson and all the other guys, they got sort of, you know, a bit of pomp and ceremony going on.
Yeah.
It's curious, intriguing. Hmm. And he must have been a Catholic. His dad was a Catholic, his sister was Catholic. They were all, you know, it was all the time of the Catholic Protestant changeover.
Yeah.
Was he gay? Marlowe was out. Why wasn't he out?
Hmm.
I find all that interesting. Anyway, so just taking that apart. And then Dickens is there on this other track that's I'm just getting it back to life now, having done 9 weeks. We went to do 6 weeks in New York and it extended to 9 weeks before we even opened. Mm. And then the reviewers just went, you know, performance of the year and prepare to be transfixed. And I thought, holy cow, wasn't going to read them, wasn't supposed to read them. And I thought, these are too good, I have to read them.
I see. So, you said that these were perfect shows for you. Why do you say that?
Well, because I'm a stand-up. Because I've done 35 years of stand-up. I have had so much time, and I was a street performer before that.
Yeah.
If you think about, particularly in Shakespeare, they were doing it off the back of carts. They were strolling players.
Yeah.
And if you think about, why were they strolling players? Because the Greeks and the Romans had theatres. Hmm. How did we go from theatres and then 1,000 years of no theatres? I think it's Christianity must have gotten in the way. They said, if you're going to perform, it's got to be about Christianity, and it's going to be the thing, and you can't do any of this.
It was Christianity stuff. And it was royalty, wasn't it? It was something about royalty licensing the theatres, I believe.
But there were no theatres before. Not only licensing of theatres, there was no one in the building.
You're right, yes.
And then they had the curtain theatre because they pulled a curtain across it. So anyway, I find all that fascinating. Yeah. And as someone who was a street performer for 4 years, I was doing performing like they used to. And so when you get to the soliloquies, and this is again going Hamlet here, as my director, Selena Cattell, was saying, you are perfectly suited, I am perfectly suited to do soliloquies because I've been doing hours by now. Years of stand-up up to the Hollywood Bowl in Madison Square Garden, talking to people in this direct way and then playing the characters, which I got from Richard Pryor. It's an interesting journey. It's just curious journey. And I'm coming to Shakespeare, it must be in a different way to the way most people is.
Yeah. So had you harboured a desire to play the Dane, as they say in With Nell and I? Was this, you know, the sort of classic, particularly I'm thinking from a comedy background, to want to, is that the ultimate?
As someone who felt that I had something interesting to bring to drama. But when I'm playing Hamlet, the weird thing is I feel very at home. Yeah. And I said to Ian McKellen, I'm 61, is this a bit old to play? This is before he did his. Is this a bit old to play Hamlet? He said, no, do it any age you want. All right, Ian. Yeah. And then he went and did his at 80. Well, they're going already in his head.
They're going both ways. We've realised that Ken Branagh is about to play Lear, and he's about your age. I think he's 62, 63. Right, so he's a very young Lear.
Maybe a slightly older Hamlet. Do what the hell? 21st century rules, yeah? Just go for it. If you look at the 21st century, you can see politically, human politically, a lot of people, the vast majority of the world, are going positive. Come on, live and let live. Women should be able to do this. Men should do this. LGBTQ, whatever you want. Be positive. Go for your dreams. And then there's a few, there's about 10 to 15 people who are saying, no, pull it back. Back to the 1930s. Come on, let's try lying as a whole a business. You know, Boris Johnson, Donald Trump, just lie upon. I'll say one lie ahead of the pack. And you're going, what is that you're bringing to the table? That's useless stuff. So it's almost like we're splitting apart. But I think the vast majority of us are trying to go forward into a live and let live world.
Yeah. Without wishing to sound glib, does being gender fluid in any way inform the fact that you're playing male and female characters in both? I really hope so.
One of the reviews said that I'm playing the male and the female characters with equal, I'm paraphrasing it, but equal honour. My Estella and Miss Havisham, I play the Estella and Miss Havisham within me, and then I'm playing the Pip within me and the Joe Gargi within, and Mrs. Joe, another female character. Just try and live and be them. And when I was younger, I couldn't have done that, especially with all the I'm trans and I'm not telling anyone I'm trans.
Yes.
And now that I've been out for so long, almost 40 years, I just, come on, let's just live as those people and see what happens on stage.
For more theatre content, search for the Evening Standard Theatre Podcast or head to our website standard.co.uk. That's The Leader. Thanks for listening. We're back tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock.